Hello and welcome to the National Oceanography Centre's Into the Blue podcast. I'm your host Will, and today in today's episode I'm joined by Dr. Kiko Calafat to recap some recent discoveries relating to storm surge extremes and sea level rise. Thanks for joining me today, Kiko.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, should we start off just a bit about your background, so a bit about your career history, maybe your journey to NOC and how you're in the position you're in today?
Yeah, so I am a scientist at the National Oceanography Centre in Liverpool, doing research on a wide range of topics related to the ocean and the climate, but really with a focus on sea level, extreme weather events, and more recently on ocean heat transport. But let me give you a fast introduction to how I got here. So I didn't set out to become a scientist. Right. I sort of stumbled into it by chance. I graduated with a degree in physics in 2002. And after that, I had a short stint in a financial firm, working as a financial advisor. But I soon realized that that was not the kind of thing I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So I quit. And after that, I decided I wanted to become an air traffic controller.
Okay.
But I failed because my English was not good enough at the time. So at that point, I started feeling a bit directionless. But then, by chance, I ran into an old friend of mine from the university who at the time was doing a PhD in physics, actually. And he started telling me all about his PhD, how great it was, how he got to travel across the world, things like that. Of course, he didn't mention the less appealing aspects of doing a PhD, such as being overworked and underpaid. But anyway, he got me interested. And I think it was that same week that I was browsing around the university website. And there was an opportunity to do a PhD on sea level. And so I decided to apply. I got the scholarship, started working on it. I immediately felt sort of an enormous intellectual excitement.
Right.
And I liked it. So I decided that was a good place for me to spend my efforts. And after that, I think the progression pathway has been quite typical for a career in academia for me.
Right.
So I got my PhD, then I was fortunate enough to be awarded a Marie Curie Fellowship, a three-year Marie Curie Fellowship, to continue my research on sea level. For the first 2 years, I was in the US, then I, for the last year, I was actually here in Southampton at the NOC. After that, I did a short postdoc, and then finally I moved to a permanent position, which is the position that I currently hold, and I'm still doing it, so I obviously like it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting journey. I think it's the first guest we've had who's nearly an air traffic controller. So.
I tried.
Yeah. So should we start on sea level rise then? So do you want to just give us sort of an introduction to sort of why we look at sea level rise, what's important, and sort of maybe a bit about sort of how it relates to some extreme weather events like storm surges, like you mentioned.
Yeah, so so early this year, so I will explain what the storm surge is, but perhaps first allow me to give a little bit of background. So early this year we published a paper looking at the likelihood of extreme sea level events over the past 60 years in Europe. Extreme sea level is typically occur during a storm, when high winds and low atmospheric pressure push water onto shore, causing the sea level to rise.
Right.
And this is what we actually call a storm surge. So those effects from the storm is what we call a storm surge. Okay, now extreme sea levels can lead to substantial flooding in coastal areas, and indeed floods related to extreme sea levels cost tens of billions of economic losses globally each year. So obviously there is an undeniable need to understand how extreme sea levels work. Okay, and as I said, the storm surges are a component of extreme sea levels, but not every storm surge leads to extreme sea level event. And this is because the likelihood of an extreme sea level event occurring also depends on the phase of the tide, obviously, but also on the state of the mean sea level. And by mean sea level, I basically mean the average level of the sea.
Right.
Let's say over a year. Okay. And this is because the storm surge actually form on top of the mean sea level, Okay, yeah. So you can, so the mean sea level can be seen as the baseline level for a storm surge. Okay, and so a storm surge that occurs on top of a higher mean sea level will lead to a larger stream sea level event. Okay, and so we look, and so in this paper we look at how the probability of occurrence of stream sea level events and also storm surges changed over the past 60 years, right? Basically.
Okay, so how do we measure these sea, like the sea level rising, extreme sea level events? Is there a few different methods, or is there one that's more effective?
Okay, just to be clear, what we measure is sea level,
right?
Not tides or storm surges, yeah, or mean sea level separately. But we can actually separate them from the sea level records that are available to us.
Right.
But what we measure is sea level.
Right.
Okay. And there are basically two instruments that we use to measure sea level in general. And the first one is what we call a tide gauge. So this is an instrument that we use to measure sea level here on the ground. Okay. And the other type of instrument that we use is satellite altimeters, basically, that measure sea level from space, basically.
Right.
But there are differences between these two types of measurements. The most important one when you're thinking about stream sea levels is the fact that tide gauges provide data at a very high frequency. They sample the ocean at a very high frequency. So some of the modern tide gauges actually give you data at a frequency better than 1 minute. And you really need high frequency data to be able to analyze stream sea levels. So for the analysis of stream sea levels, we use data from tide gauges, not from altimetry mainly.
Right. So they, are they all over the world? Like, they're all over the world? Are they, do we look at ones all over the world?
Yeah, that's one of the other differences between tide gauges and altimetry.
Yeah.
So tide gauges are located on, well, at the coast.
Yeah.
And because tide gauges have been around much long, for much longer than altimetry, so they provide, in some cases, some long, well, long records of sea level. Okay. Some of them actually go back to the 1700s.
Yeah.
Okay. Altimetry provides better spatial coverage, but only since 1992.
Right.
And also, as I said, the temporal sampling is not really suitable to do stream value analysis.
So they're fairly modern then.
Fairly modern.
Yeah, yes. So you mentioned that sort of back in March last year, you did the paper about storm, sort of looking at storm surge extremes. What were the findings of the paper then? Were they what you expected to find, or were they?
Okay, so let me tell you something first. So how can I say this? The subject of understanding how climate change relates to the occurrences of storm surge streams is at the cutting edge of sea level research.
Right.
So there are no settled questions that people agree on. There are inconsistencies between studies and things like that. Okay. But most studies on storm surge streams emphasize that changes in storm surge streams over time, and by changes in storm surge streams, I mean changes in the occurrence probability of those events, are not statistically significant.
Right.
Many studies actually have concluded this, that the changes are not statistically significant. And this is often interpreted as to mean that there are no changes in storm surge streams. And actually, this is the story that's been told also in the IPCC reports.
Right. Okay?
But actually, this is a misinterpretation of what we call a statistical significance, because the fact that a change or a trend is not a statistical significant doesn't mean that there is no trend, or that the trend is small or absent.
Right.
In the same sense that absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Okay. And this is what we pointed out in our study, basically. So what we found is that storm surge streams have become much more likely in certain parts of Europe, particularly in northern parts of the British Isles, and less likely south of these latitudes, so in, well, parts of Europe from Portugal to Germany, right. Actually, they have actually become less likely over the past 60 years. Just to give you some numbers, what used to be a 50-year event, storm surge event, in 1960, is now a 30-year event. So that's an increase, a 40% increase in the probability of occurrence of storm surge event.
So that's quite a big increase over, I guess, what is relatively a relatively short amount of time, I guess.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes. It's such a big change, yes.
Yeah.
And the thing is that these changes are comparable to the effects of sea level rise.
Right.
Okay. So just to clarify something. So the likelihood of extreme sea level events can change because of two factors. The first one is changes in storminess affecting the occurrences of storm surges. The second one is changes in mean sea level, such as sea level rise.
Yeah.
This will change the baseline level for the storm surges. And so it has an effect on the likelihood of extreme sea level events. Okay. And before our study, the picture that was being painted is that only sea level rise actually was affecting the likelihood of extreme sea level events, while a storm surge events were actually stationary. They weren't changing. That's the story that I was being told. And that has important implications because adaptation policy actually is informed by climate science. And in most countries, current policy for assessing future coastal flood risk assumes that the probability of storm surges is the same now as in the future.
Right.
So they assume that they won't change in the future. And of course, should this turn out to be wrong, then it may, you know, cause the adaptation plans to become ineffective. And what we showed in our paper is that this assumption is actually wrong, is false. And storm surge events are changing at similar rates to the sea level rise at many locations.
This is a pretty important discovery then, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So our results were contrary to the prevailing view.
Yeah.
Basically.
So did the study sort of show that in the future it's likely to carry on in that trend, or will we not know that until?
So I don't have the right answer to that question, but what I can say, roughly speaking, is that so the changes that we found in storm surge streams were mostly driven by what we call internal climate variability.
Right.
Internal climate variability is variability that is due to the internal dynamics of the climate system without any external forcing. So this is not what we would call due to climate change. It's not related.
Right.
And there is a part that is related to climate change. Now, internal climate variability can change over time. So those are, by definition, say, fluctuating changes, okay? So the changes that we reported might not continue into the future.
Right.
But there is a part of these changes that is actually driven by climate change, anthropogenic forcing. And those changes are likely to continue into the future.
So it's like, yeah.
This part, yes.
Yeah.
So yes, some of the changes will continue into the future.
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, the other thing I wanted to mention is that, so the reason why we were able to detect those changes in storm surge streams while other past studies couldn't, is because it is very challenging to estimate those changes from tidal gauge records, basically because traditional approaches to estimating streams are subject to something that we call sampling error. By this I mean that the changes, the long-term changes that you are trying to measure, are two orders of magnitude smaller than the year-to-year variations in streams.
Right.
So this actually introduces a lot of sampling error in your trend estimates, and traditional approaches are particularly sensitive to those complications. We were able to address those complications by developing a new method called Bayesian methods, which allowed us to combine all the data from TigerEdge data and enable sharing of information across data sites. And when you do that, you kind of minimizes the effect of sampling error on your return estimates.
Is that accuracy then?
Yes, so your estimates of long-term changes are much more precise.
Right. Okay.
And you can detect changes that are smaller than you could actually detect using traditional approaches.
Right, that's really interesting. So later on last year, so you made a pretty significant discovery in the Mediterranean relating to sea rise. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that study?
Yes. So before I dive into this particular study, let me share some thoughts as to why understanding regional sea level is very important.
Yeah.
So usually when you hear people talking about sea level rise on the news, for instance, they are usually talking about global average sea level. Not always, but usually. But the thing is that global average sea level rise is not a very good measure of local sea level. And this is because sea level rise is highly non-uniform in space. So it's very different at different locations. And so it is very important to understand how this works, how local sea level works, and understand the main drivers of local sea level variability. And this is what we did in that particular study in the Mediterranean Sea. So the focus was the Mediterranean Sea. Now, the problem of trying to understand local sea level is that, as I said, tide gauges give you long records of sea level, but only at a few locations along the coastline. And tide gauges and satellite altimetry gives you actually better spatial coverage, but only since 1992.
Right.
And you actually want to know what happened before 1992 in other locations in the deep ocean, but also at coastal locations that are engaged, not observed. Yeah. And so what we did is we collected TigerEdge data, altimetry data, and we combined them using, statistical methods that also included what we call patterns of responses to land ice melting. So by doing this, we were able not only to reconstruct past sea level changes, but also to quantify the contribution from land ice melting and also, ocean heat uptake, thermal expansion, and separate those changes. That's the novelty in our study. It's this capability of separating the source contributions to the sea level change regionally in the Mediterranean Sea. And what we found is that in the Mediterranean Sea, sea level rise has accelerated significantly over the past 20 years. So it's actually rising probably at the rate that is twice as large as the rate prior to those years. Significant increase.
Yes.
But we also found that there is a lot of regional variability in terms of the rate of sea level rise within the Mediterranean basin. So again, some regions are there are some regions where sea level is actually rising much faster than the average.
Yeah. So I guess that ties in with the thing, the findings you have of the storm surges, that both are rising at the same time.
Yes. Well, that again. So storm surges and sea level rise, mean sea level rise, are two components, two factors that affect the likelihood of extreme sea level events. Yeah. Both of them separately affect those likelihoods. So it's very important to understand both components of the system.
Yeah.
And so the first study addressed the storm surges, the second study addressed sea level rise, basically regionally in the Mediterranean Sea. So where you have sea level rise and on top of that you have an increase in the likelihood of storm surge events, this obviously will lead to a significant increase in the likelihood of extreme sea levels.
Right. Okay. So what can we do, and what are the sort of solutions we can do to mitigate the effects of these extreme sea level events when they happen, if they happen? What can we do, sort of either locally or internationally, that can sort of mitigate those effects?
So I'm not a coastal planner, so I don't know exactly how coastal adaptation should be designed and implemented. But my rough rough idea, for what it's worth, is that so adaptation plans should focus on basically measures of protection that aim to balance protection costs with the consequences of a hazard, right, storm surge event, were it to happen. Because this can sell. So I think a well-designed risk mitigation strategy can save both lives, but also money.
Yeah.
By reducing disaster impact, while at the same time avoiding, well, needless and expensive overprotection measures. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I think it's all I can come up with for an answer.
Yeah, it seems like, I guess, a logical thing. That, yeah. So what's next for you then? Are there any particular sort of exciting projects you're working on at the moment?
Yes, there are. There are a few, yes. So let me tell you something. So most of my research for a large part of my career has focused on sea level.
Yeah.
That's most of it. But lately, I feel it's just become harder and harder for me to figure out new interesting ideas in sea level. And this has caused me to shift research interests. Right. Or rather, not shift research interests, rather branch out from sea level into other areas of research. Right. And so one project that I am very excited about is called the EPOC project. This is a European project funded through the Horizon Europe program.
Right.
EPOC stands for Explaining and Predicting the Ocean Conveyor.
Right.
And by ocean conveyor, I mean the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation.
Right.
Which is a large system of currents that carry warm water from the tropics into the North Atlantic, and it is largely responsible for the mild weather climate that we enjoy in Europe. And so the goal of the project is to basically understand the role of the overturning circulation in the more general context of the Earth climate system and its impacts on the weather, basically.
Yeah, so do you think you work in sea level and that will aid you in carrying out that and working
so
on that project?
So I'm still very much active in sea level.
Right.
And this project actually involves a sea level component as well, because we are looking at ocean heat transport across the Atlantic Ocean based on sea level observations, among other types of observations.
Yeah, so complements pretty nicely.
So,
but thank you for joining us today, Kiko. Follow the links in the description to learn more about Kiko's recent papers, or visit our Under the Surface pages to learn out more about sea level rise. If you haven't already, make sure to follow us on social media to ensure you don't miss out on future episodes. See you in the next episode.